Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, a tower story, a tower tale from Tom Ray with kind of a surprise ending. Actually, very surprising to me. I had no idea you could do this. It's coming up next on Twerked.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store with outstanding service, savings, and support online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio. Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from this microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower, like that one. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. Glad to be here. It's a beautiful day here in Nashville. Hot. We got some smoke coming in over from the West Coast. Thank you, West Coast, for your forest fires and sending smoke all over the rest of the U.S. It's not too bad here. Our guest today is Tom Ray. We're going to bring Tom on in just a minute. Not quite yet. I've got something to tell you about quickly before we head into Tom and his amazing stories about a fallen tower. And that's about Nautel. Nautel sponsors our show, and we really appreciate that. I've got a bunch of Nautel transmitters, and we got three announcements for you here. We'll tell you about the Transmission Talk Tuesday coming up this coming Tuesday in just a minute. But they got a couple of promotions. If you're thinking about buying a transmitter, you're going to want to at least consider these promotions. The first one is a free second backup exciter. Maybe it's a backup, maybe it's a second exciter, maybe they put these words together. I'm not sure. But anyway, you buy a GV series transmitter and you can get a free, as they say, second backup exciter. I'm not sure how many backup exciters that it actually has. I think maybe it's anyway. All you got to do, talk to your Nautel rep or go to nautel.com/offers, nautel.com/offers to see about the free second backup exciter from Nautel. The other one, if you don't need a transmitter that big as a GV series is, look at this. You're going to save some money off the VS2.5. Now, I've got one of these transmitters. Love it. Works great. We have it on the air. We've had it for years, actually. You get $4,000 off of a VS2.5. And if you want to add the HD option to it, you get $6,000 off of that. And you can do the math. They do allow you to add these together, get $10,000 total off both of these. It's called the 4610 VS Savings Promotion. Again, talk to your Nautel rep or go to nautel.com/offers. Now, the Transmission Talk Tuesday, that roundtable discussion still going on. Got one more in July. I don't know if they're continuing into August or not. We'll find out. They may take a pause, but there's one more in July. And this one, I think, is one that everyone should go to. If you have the least bit interest in power levels, engineering, coverage areas, point-to-point paths, all that kind of stuff, it's going to be about the RF toolkit from Nautel. Jeff is going to do a deep dive into this on how to use the useful planning tools that are contained on the Nautel website. The HD radio calculator, for example, will calculate your HD carrier injection. There's going to be a live how-to walkthrough on the RF coverage tool, detailing how to build a site and plot both coverage maps and plot point-to-point radio shots. So whether it's, 950 megahertz STL, you can plot microwave paths as well on there too. You need to go to nautel.com/webinars to get signed up. Easy process. Just go to nautel.com/webinars and click on the Transmission Talk Tuesday. Sign up for that. They'll send you an email reminding you that the webinar is coming up. They'll send you the link to it, and you can even download a little thing for your calendar to remind you that the webinar is coming up. So check that out, if you would, at nautel.com/webinars this Tuesday, July 27th. It's about the RF toolkit from Nautel. All right. There you go. Welcome into the show. I want to bring in my friend, former co-host on this very podcast, and now he's certainly the man about the U.S. doing engineering, Tom Ray. Tom, welcome in. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Kirk, and good to be here. I apologize for yesterday when I stopped at a trusted rest stop to do the show, and, no more cell signal there.
Isn't it great? Well, you don't have to apologize. The Can You Hear Me Now guy needs to apologize.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, he went to another carrier, but anyway.
oh, Yeah. So you went to a park that you know you've had great coverage in the past, great right. 4G coverage. And you said that since, at least in your area, not putting down Verizon, that I'm sure there's a million problems in deploying the stuff that I don't know about. But since they deployed 5G, you've had some 4G coverage issues.
Yeah, used to be able to hold up a call all the way up Route 17 up between here and Binghamton, and then all the way up I-81 up to Watertown, New York. Yeah, now on Route 17, you're lucky if you can make a phone call.
Wow, wow. I have not experienced that yet myself. Certainly believe that that could be the case. You know what? I'll just put out an all points bulletin right now. If you are an engineer, if you know about changes in coverage areas of cell companies when they are deploying 5G, and you want to talk about that, let me know. You can always write to me, kirk@harnack.com, K-I-R-K at H-A-R-N-A-C-K, kirk@harnack.com. And let me know if you have some knowledge in that area, and I'll be glad to talk to you about that. Maybe we'll put you on the show. Thomas, do you talk to anybody from cell companies about these coverage issues?
Actually, you know, it's funny. One of my sites, there's a cell site up there, and I saw their tech once. He was busy, so I really didn't want to bug him, but I just went in for kind of the grand tour. And years ago, when cellular started, I worked for a cell company for a little while. And boy, let me tell you, the technology changed. It used to be racks upon racks upon racks in a building, and now it fits about that big, and that's the whole cell site, and the amplifiers are on the tower.
I've even seen situations where most of the equipment is up on the tower and there's very little in the building now.
It's basically all IT equipment in the building. There's nothing to it.
Wow. You know, another interesting problem that I've seen lately, and maybe you've experienced this too, is unlike you at that park where you had one bar of signal strength, as opposed to your usual four or five bars, I've been to plenty of places here lately where I've got full signal strength. It's showing full bars on my phone, and yet I have no data. I can make a phone call and I can send an SMS text. Okay, I get that, but I have little or zero data. In fact, I'm driving around Nashville, and sometimes I've got the Google Maps on. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, the Google Maps lady says, "You are back online." Really? I didn't know I was offline. I mean, so Google Maps downloads pretty much your whole map, you know, as soon as it can when you're traveling, and stores that in memory. If you take some crazy detours, you may not have that if you're out of coverage, but it pretty well downloads the whole map when it can. But man, for it to say so many times driving around my neighborhood within 2 or 3, 4 miles of my house, I'm getting that. Tom, do you have any indication that cell sites lose some infrastructure in terms of the data connection?
Well, you know, I don't know really what's going on with these things. Somebody started talking about 5G on a Facebook post I put up, and it was like, well, you know, if you don't upgrade the backbone to the cell site, what do you expect? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, and you know, and you're talking Nashville. I'm talking here, like between here and Albany. Albany's the state capital. You're lucky on the thruway if you can make a phone call. This is the New York State thruway. It's not a minor road.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, come on.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know all about the coverage issues and problems, and you know, it may be difficult. You know what I would think would be a great idea. Of course, you know, customers call in all the time with just crazy, stupid issues. I get that. And they don't want to bother, you know, real engineers with that kind of thing. And they have scripts and customer service people to walk you through stuff. But it wouldn't be great if engineers like us had a special number to call, or at least a phone number, or even an app that was special for us that we could report a problem that they may not know about. And you can trust us. If I say there's no data here, yes, I've rebooted the phone. Yes, my phone works fine. Yes, I've got five bars of signal. No, I have no data. Wouldn't it be great to be able to report that? What's that?
What I found is if you can find the email address of the CEO of the company, all of a sudden you get somebody who will talk your language. I did that with Hulu. There all of a sudden was an audio problem on the local television stations where, you know, they'd be quiet for a minute and the AGC would come up and boom and get knocked down. immediately when they started talking. And it was, I mean, it was annoying. So yeah. I shot a note to the vice president of something or other who was just under the CEO's position. And I got a note, here's my qualifications. Here's who I am. I got a call back from the guy who was in charge of that. And he said, you know what? This is great. He says, you're not yelling at me. he says, you're trying to help. He says, I bet I can trust your ears. And I worked with him for about 2 weeks and they were trying different things. And then, then he asked me, he says, here's three channels, grade which one you like best and tell me why. And I did. And all of a sudden they've kind of adopted that. And they gave me several months. Yeah, I wasn't asking for anything. They gave me several months free. So I couldn't complain.
You know, one thing we as broadcast engineers probably need to remember when we're dealing with companies, big corporations, big media companies like Hulu, and I say media companies, they're most of them are in the distribution business, although certainly Netflix, creates lots of stuff. But they may have completely different tools in their toolbox than we have as broadcast engineers. All their stuff may be in the IT world, and who knows? Right. People writing their software may or may not really understand audio very well. They may pull some code out of a textbook, plop it in there for an AGC and not really understand how to implement it, number one, or number two, how it's to be set up. And so can't seem to hold the right number of fingers up there. I just realized. Anyway, I'm not having fingers. I'm not having a stroke, really. As broadcast engineers, we hear problems and we think, they need to fix this. They need to fix that. Well, they need to fix it, but you were polite and we need to not assume that we know how to fix their problem. Because we may not, but we can offer to help.
Well, it was interesting because a lot of their monitoring and a lot of their evaluation is done in the IT domain. It's not even a human being sitting there. Yeah. And that was the problem because the IT stuff said it was great. And it was like, yeah, but the human ears say, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So the IT stuff didn't recognize AGC pump and suck as right, being exactly. A problem.
It just said, hey, there's audio here, and look, it's consistent, so have a nice day. And want consistent,
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Hey, well, we're here to talk about a tower incident and some other incidents that you've come across lately. I guess we ought to jump into the tower stuff. We'll tease it good and start it out, then we're going to take a quick commercial break. But let's go ahead and jump into it. And remember, Tom, we've got a bunch of photographs. I put them in some kind of an order, and Suncast is welcome to show these. We tell you what, let me find the folder where I was in. Of course, now I won't be able to find it quickly and easily. Give me a second. Well, Tom, go ahead and verbally, kind of walk us into this and then we'll find a picture or two here.
Okay, well, imagine that you've got a client and they're going to be selling the radio station and you show up at the site this one morning and, to do the final walkthrough before they do the closing. And as you're approaching the site, it's a 4-tower AM directional. As you're approaching the site, you're kind of looking and going, why am I only seeing 3.5 towers?
We've got a picture here. Suncast, let's look at the picture that starts with 00. And this will start to tell the story here. Picture 00. Oh, not that one.
No, not that one.
That was from a couple episodes back, I think. Looking for a picture of 4 towers. It's a bird's eye view. Okay. No worries. Yeah, no problem. All right. You drive to the site and there's supposed to be four towers.
And I see 3.5. You're on the road and you're looking going, it's gotta be an optical illusion. Yes. And you pull up to the site and half of the tower's missing. And it's there we go. There it is.
All right, what are we looking at here?
Okay, you're looking at this is actually WWRL in New York City radio station, 25 kilowatts day, 5 kilowatts night, 4-tower parallelogram day and night. Mm-hmm. The tower that is in the, pretty much the center of the screen, it's the upper rear tower towards the river.
Okay.
Half of that tower was gone.
If you were a bird here looking at this or a drone, it's the farthest away tower from you.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm standing there, and let's face it, Kirk, you've known me a while. How often have you known me to be speechless? I called the owner of the station. It was the first phone call I made. I called the owner of the station. I said, "We got this problem." She's what? I said, "Half a tower is gone." She's what? Half a tower is gone. It's like 44 years in the business. I haven't lost a tower yet.
You said you were driving to it and you're thinking optical illusion because this is one of the last things that you suspect. And wait a minute, the station's on the air, right?
Oh, and the station was on the air. Yeah, yeah. I punched up the radio and it's there, and I'm like,
huh? Okay. So if you have a tornado, a windstorm, a hurricane, and your FM station goes off the air, and when you can, you drive to the site. If you're not seeing the tower, okay, that's not entirely unexpected, right?
Correct. Correct.
But you're driving to the station. Day. It's a clear sunny day. The station's on the air. You're driving there, and you're thinking, aliens, aliens. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it was aliens.
Well, you know, the ironic thing is, and for the people who do AM out there, they know what I'm talking about. You measure the common point current. So you measure the current into the antenna system, and that's how you determine power. When that top of the tower fell, it obviously changes the impedance reflected into the common point, but it changed it such that the transmitter backed its power down and the common point current was exactly the same as it would have been at full power. So the remote control never called.
Okay. Well, most of our viewers and listeners know exactly what you mean, but I'm going to break it down for those who are a little bit newer. So an AM radio station, the way they all used to, would they measure the power by how much RF current, how much radio frequency power, how much current was flowing at a known impedance point in the system. Oftentimes that was a 50 ohm point. Didn't have to be. The common point would be what's feeding in the case of a directional AM station that's got several towers to make a directional pattern around it. There would be a common point. So the transmitter would feed to a common point before it would split off and be manipulated and go to the different towers. So the common point was the point at which all the transmitter power was going into a known impedance, a known load, and everybody's happy at that point when it's working right. And you're saying, and any change in the system, coil, a capacitor, a guy wire falling against the tower, a tower halfway falling down, anything is going to change the parameters, change the impedance of the whole thing. I mean, it's like the engine cowling coming off on your airplane. Yeah, it flies different now. So you're saying that the impedance changed and your transmitter is now seeing some reflected power that it wasn't seeing before. The impedance was no longer as expected. And the transmitter said, oh, I've got a problem. I'm going to back down automatically to some level. Take it from there. What happened then?
Yeah, well, you know, it had backed itself down to 15 kilowatts. And it was funny because I opened the door of the building and I walked in and I kind of looked around the corner at the transmitter. it was fat, dumb, and happy. It was just sitting there running. So I called the owner, and then I scratched my head for a minute and said, okay, now what? Well, then the neighbor from across the street came over. Now, she saw it fall. Now, this week, that particular weekend, we had hurricane force winds here in the New York City area, which it wasn't a storm. It wasn't a hurricane. I don't know what it was, but the National Weather Service clocked it at like 96 miles an hour in that area. And she saw it fall and she was looking for some assurance that one of the towers wasn't going to fall across the street, which it wasn't going to. But if you look at that picture, you'll see there are houses all around there. And if a tower just fell straight, it is a chance it could hit a house.
Let's pop that picture up one more time, if you don't mind, Suncast, that 00 picture.
And yeah, there it is.
And sometimes pictures are deceptive. So those towers are tall enough to where if one fell straight over, which they typically don't do, but if it fell straight over, it could whack a house, right?
Right. And what's unique about these towers is that back in the, they were built in 1960. So back in the 60s at some point, the entire tower was used during the day. And then they shut the top half of the tower off at night and disconnected it. Which has the effect of A, reducing the efficiency of the antenna, and B, reducing your chance of skywave, of the signal going up instead of walking across the ground as you want it to do. So in the middle of these towers, there's an insulator, just like you'd find at the bottom of the tower. So halfway up the tower, there's a base insulator. They've been jumpered over since then because of the power increase, that happened about 15, 20 years ago. But still, it's there, and that's a Suncast, point in the tower.
Picture number 3-0-3 Suncast is going to give us a view of. Well, actually, you can see it here too. Actually,
If you look at the center of the tower, you'll see that it comes to a taper. Well, that's sitting on an insulator.
Yeah,
and those insulators, a lot of people don't realize that in this instance, the insulator is bolted to the tower, into the upper part of the tower. But the lower part, it sits on a pin that's literally about as big as my thumb.
Okay.
And the reason for that is you know, with wind and whatever, you want that tower to be able to move slightly so it doesn't shatter the insulator. You know, that
right.
Otherwise you'd be putting a lot of stress on the insulator. So right. What happened was, and we figured this out, one of the guy wires had loosened up, one of the preforms. If you don't know what a preform is, go out and take a look sometime at a utility pole that has a guy wire on it. Mm-hmm. And at the bottom, there's always a stake in the ground, and the wire comes up, and it loops through, and it curlicues around.
Right.
Nobody sits there on the truck and curlicues this thing. These are called preforms. It's a preform curlicue, and you just wrap it on the tower, or wrap it on the wire. One of those started to loosen up, and when that loosened up, these towers are Philly strand. Now, Philly strand is a plastic guy wire. It's not a metal guy wire, and they will stretch to a certain limit. They don't stretch mm-hmm. a lot, but they stretch to a certain limit. And it stretched, you know, it stretched just enough, and the wind was blowing so hard that insulator went, whoops, there we go, went boop off the pin. Once that happened, that was it. The tower went down.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break right now. I'm talking to Tom Ray, TomRayConsulting.com. And by the way, on the photographs, a lot of the photographs that we're going to show you today are courtesy of Scott Feibusch. So look for his website on the pictures. Thanks a lot to Scott Feibusch. We're using those with permission. Really appreciate that from Scott Feibusch. This site actually was his site of the week on 1 week in June, I believe. So you might want to check that out at feibusch.com. It's Kirk Harnack along with Tom Ray. We're going to be right back after this word from Broadcast Bionics.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the A10. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
Broadcast Bionics bring you just a bevy of cool tools to make your broadcasting better by giving you the tools to sound better on the air in terms of information coming to you, and also putting your best things, your best moments on social media. And you know what? I always feel smarter after listening to that guy narrate the Broadcast Bionics ad. I feel like they know what they're talking about. Hey, we're here with Tom Ray. Tom, do you know what you're talking about? Despite your accent?
Sometimes.
All right. We're going to keep on looking at some of these pictures and getting a description of what's going on here. Tom, hey, Suncast, I'm not sure if can we get picture 03? That's the close-up of the tower. And there we go. That's okay.
There you go.
That's, yeah.
So you see where it comes down to a point,
And if you take a look, there is a there's an insulator there. It's a ceramic insulator. It's probably 24 inches tall. And you know, it's strapped over, it's jumpered over.
That's what the little wires are that seem to go around it.
Right. And that is a, you know, that's a weak point in the tower, because if something happens, you know, that it moves, you know, every other part of the tower doesn't, that does. So anyway, you know, I had called the owner, and then I talked to the neighbor, and I figured, well, you know, if the neighbor saw it go down and has already come over and started asking questions, there are other people who saw this thing and have concerns. So I called a lawyer that I know, that I actually used on the WOR project, when I built WOR back in 2005, and, you know, talked to him and said, look, here's what's going on. I says, I'm going to need you to interface to the town. You know, this is New Jersey. It's not the middle of nowhere. It's the middle of New Jersey or Northern New Jersey. And, you know, they're strict with their zoning laws. This is a protected wetland. So you know, in addition to, you know, at some point possibly having to deal with the Army Corps of Engineers, you're also dealing with the Hackensack Meadowlands Commission, which is the zoning authority for the wetlands. And there are other agencies we have to deal with. So I engaged the attorney, and then I called a tower company and said, guys, I need you down here tomorrow. Like tomorrow, like, so we can look at this. And then I called at Tom Jones from Carl T. Jones Corporation. It was the consulting firm on this antenna system. So I called him, and he said, what do you mean there's half a tower missing? I said, am I speaking the right language here? There's half a tower missing. He said, well, where is it? I don't know. I haven't gone looking for it yet.
Aliens, I'm telling you, it's aliens.
Yeah. So I did find it eventually.
Okay.
The top of the tower fell towards, if we remember back to that picture of the overhead shot of the towers, it fell towards the tower on the left-hand side, the left rear.
Okay.
All right. And the actual top of the tower landed on the guy anchor for that tower. That's tower number one. When we actually measured the tension on that wire, it was almost three times what it should have been.
And because of the extra weight on the
tower. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, needless to say, the tower guys had to go in and very carefully cut that off and very carefully remove that little section off the guy anchor so as not to shock the system and have it all of a sudden go back to normal tension.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I want to tease something that's coming up ahead. If you think, dear listener, that you know how this problem got fixed, you need to wait a minute because, Tom has spent some time talking about all the agencies that have a finger in this piece of property that, you know, they're going to want their slice of pie, their pound of flesh, their approval, or maybe give their denial. And not only did Tom have to work through that, and I'm sure he's going to describe some more, but the method for replacing the top of this tower in this swampy area. Oh my gosh. Tom, I got a question about the tower section that came off. Were all of its guy wires still intact, or were any of them broken?
One of them had broken. That was the one that had loosened up, but everything else was still attached to it.
The one that had loosened up. Okay. And describe again, you know, I've put up a few towers and seen them put up, new AM towers. And normally this is done with a concrete foundation on the ground or a pier, right, just a couple of feet high. And as they pour the concrete, they usually put a J hook down into the concrete so that the hook stands up. It may be, you know, one time I was at a tower site where they were doing this, building the pier, pouring the concrete, the tower foreman put the pin in there. It was a J hook to give it some grab in the concrete, and it wasn't threaded. It was just a plain J hook. And I asked him, I said, don't you need that to be threaded? Don't you put a nut down on that? He said, we found out after a great deal of experimentation that towers are pretty heavy and they're not going to come up off of that. So we save some money and we don't put a nut or a washer on that. So, yeah. Well, now, your situation was different. Apparently, it It did come up off of that, yeah?
Oh, yeah, 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 because there was nothing holding it in. Yeah. And, you know, it came over, and it just kept going. You know, it was being pushed by the wind.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I called the tower company and said, I need you down here tomorrow. We need to start having a discussion. And then I said, you know what? I know somebody really interesting and really good. This guy, I've got a station in Connecticut. It's on the Channel 61 tower, which is a 1300 footer, which has a 14 foot face. And anything that goes on that tower has to be run by this guy. You know, he does a structural analysis and makes sure that everything's, you know, up to snuff. His name is Tony Fonseca. And if that name sounds familiar to anyone, Tony is the one who rebuilt the WBT towers in Charlotte, North Carolina, when two of them came down in a hurricane a number of years ago.
Oh, okay.
They did not have tower plans. The towers were made by Blau Knox, which is out of business, so they couldn't get tower plans. And he literally climbed the first tower and diagrammed it bolt by bolt.
Wow.
And reproduced the tops of the other two towers. So, okay, so now I called Tony. Oh, by the way, he also helped design the top of the World Trade Center.
Okay.
So all he kind of knows what he's doing.
Tony Fonseca. And,
yeah, and Tony agreed to come in. Yeah, he's in Jersey, so he said, I'm in town. I'll come up tomorrow with the tower crew. And we all stood there and went with our mouths open.
Okay, so you got three and a half towers, and the top half of the tower is laying over partly over a guy wire for one of the towers that's still standing. And I'm right. and is it a swampy mess there, like it looks like on the picture?
Oh, it's a big disaster. All right. I we stood around and started talking about it and said, well, what can we do, you know? And if we had taken down the lower part of the tower and put up a brand new tower, that would have triggered the new tower standards, which would have meant adding a second set of guy anchors, because we would have needed two sets of guy anchors, and beefing up that concrete base at the bottom.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, we're talking protected wetland. We're talking the Army Corps of Engineers. We're talking the New Jersey Meadowlands Commission. We're talking the Bergen County Soil Conservation Commission.
Wait, you want to dig holes and pour concrete in wetlands? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And or disturb the wetland, you know.
Yeah.
So we started talking about it, and Tony said, you know, he says, is there any chance you think you could get the original diagrams on the towers? I said, well, that's a good thought. I don't know. They were built by stainless. Hmm. I'll find out. And he says, what I'm thinking is, he says, if we actually did what we're going to call a repair on the tower, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. built a new section, a new upper section, he says, then we don't need, and build it to the same standard. Mm-hmm. He says, then we don't need the extra guy anchors. We don't need to beef up the base. And therefore it becomes a repair, and that should get through zoning without a problem. And coincidentally, as we're standing there talking, who shows up but the building inspector?
Oh, okay.
He happened to be in the neighborhood and saw us standing there, so he showed up. So we ran our plan by him, and he went, you know what? I like that. He says, any chance not to involve the Meadowlands Commission is a good plan with me.
Oh, so he was in favor of, he was encouraging of what you wanted to do then.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And you know, I mean, we told him what happened. We're still in the discovery stage to figure out what happened here. But, you know, I says, we have to rebuild it, but we don't want to cause any extra grief for anybody.
Right.
And he kind of liked that. And so, one thing led to another. I called Stainless, believe it or not, for towers that were built in 1960, they still had the plans.
No way. So we
bought the plans, and Tony now had all the information he needed. And that area where the insulator was, we rebuilt it without the insulator.
Right.
So
no insulator.
He had to fabricate a 5 foot section of tower.
Okay.
To go in that spot without the insulator.
Did it still come to down to a point, or did it attach to the legs?
Now it's just a straight tower.
Okay. Okay. So that tower has no more point in the middle and no insulator.
Correct. Well, the only insulator it has is at the base, which it needs for an AM tower.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Series failure. So, you know, over the winter, they got to work and they fabricated a tower.
Now, we're going to want to hear about how this came out, but we got to take a break, because the way that they, it's amazing. I would not have thought that this method would work, but
it was.
I wouldn't have even thought of this method. So that's coming up. I got to hold you through the break. Tom Ray of TomRayConsulting.com is our guest. Tom used to be one of the original co-hosts on this show. So we're glad to have Tom back, and he runs into some mighty interesting problems, let me tell you. Usually on the subway, but sometimes at radio stations. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by our friends at Angry Audio, and they come out with the why didn't somebody do this before? I'll tell you why, because it takes a guy like Mike Dosh to think about. Mike Dosh at Angry Audio. All right, here we have a little jumper, if you will. It's a male quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve, you know, a headphone plug. And over here is a female quarter-inch tip-ring sleeve or a headphone jack. And look what's between them. This little magnetic thing. If you are wearing your headphones and you get up and walk away and forgot you got your headphones on, look what happens. Blink! It just comes apart. And look, the magnets pulled back right back together. So you can add this to your headphone cable and do it for the, here's where you need to put this, where guests come in, because maybe they're not used to taking off their headphones before they get up and walk away. Boop. They will, you won't have to repair any more headphone jacks, the jacks or the plugs, or where the headphone cable goes into the headphone itself, because that'll just pull right apart like that. That's new from Angry Audio. You can go to the website, angryaudio.com. They can't call this MagSafe. I forget what they call it. I should know this. But at angryaudio.com, you'll see all the cool cabling solutions that they have. The whole Studio Hub line is there. And let me show you something else. If Suncast will throw the camera back on me for a sec. They've got, here's a Studio Hub headphone amp. Need a headphone amp? Studio Hub has this one right here. It's beautiful. It fits down into a Decora sized box, and Decora a plate can go over it right there. It can be run by the power of a Studio Hub system, and then your left-right audio is carried, balanced audio right across there. And if you want something even fancier, you can go for this. This is the headphone gizmo from Angry Audio, and this is the one that you won't snag your pantyhose on. I know you're just waiting for me to say that, because I say it every time. But it uses the same Studio Hub standard to get audio in and loop it through. And you can put your power into there as well. You can have one of these will power two more of these things. And I think the power on this will power four of these. So check it all out at angryaudio.com. And check out the new headphone thingy here, the magnetic thingy. They've got them in stock now. All right. Thanks, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We've got a word from Max Connect Wireless. We'll be right back.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
John Takak, talking about Max Connect Wireless. I've got a couple of them right here. These are 4G LTE modems. But this one's from Cradlepoint, this one's from Pepwave, and it's not the modem that makes the difference. It's the SIM card inside. The SIM card is a Max Connect wireless SIM card. And what does it do? It gives you a static IP address, like John Takak was just talking about, but it also gives you priority data. You get priority over all those other schmucks in the stadium. Your packets, your data go first. The only people more important than you at that point are first responders, and they should be. So this will get you through. This will get audio, even video, bidirectionally, when other people are having trouble making a post to Facebook. So check that out. I love them. I use them. And lots of transmitter sites all around the country are now using these. And for going out on remotes. It's a great thing to go out on remote because your data will get through. Check it out at maxconnect.com. All right. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Tom Ray. And Tom's about to get to the juicy part. At least I think this is the juicy part. How in the world? Tom, I guess you can't emphasize enough how many agencies have their thumb in this parcel of land We know that the New York City area is famous for, you know, this kind of, you know, bureaucratic paperwork to do anything. And this is a wetland and it's on a river and it's protected this. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Well, so we Tony drew up the plans. Mm-hmm. And we went to the town and we filed this, you know, for a building permit with the town. And of course they have to run that by the Wetlands Commission, and they ran it by the Wetlands Commission. And they went, oh, you're just repairing something. Have a nice day here. So we didn't have to go through them. So that means no Army Corps of Engineers, no Wetlands Commission, no, nobody else. We're just dealing with the town.
Okay. So
this was good.
Good, good, good.
So the tower sections arrive on site. They actually painted them before they got there, because after discussion, we said, you know what? Probably not a good idea to paint them in a wetland.
Okay. Yeah.
So they came in and, well, now we have to get out through that swampy mess. So they cut through the catwalk. They cut a section out of the catwalk. And what you do is you bring in these pads. They're construction pads. They're made out of plastic. Mm-hmm. I call them big Lego blocks because they interlock. And they're intended to float. And they're intended to take heavy equipment and float.
Let's pop that picture back up. The first one, 00, Suncast, if you could find that picture. And maybe Tom can walk us through just what direction the equipment had to come in from. So these are like big pallets that you lay down, and then like a crane or something could traverse it as a temporary bridge. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. Excuse me. Now, if you take a look at the transmitter building, which is that white block down there at the lower right corner, right before the street.
Right.
Just to the bottom, well, what would be the bottom or the left side of that building, they went through, they took some crushed stone and they smoothed out the area going down towards the catwalk, and they took out a section of the catwalk. And then they built a road with these pads going towards that tower in the back. And of course, as you can see, they had to, and this is tidal. So there are times when all that water is not there.
So they built
a road using these mats going out to that tower. And that's how they brought the sections out. And that's how they brought their equipment out. The winch that was used, you know, for the load line to pull it up was actually at the transmitter building. So they put the winch at the building and ran a line all the way out to the tower.
Which they have plenty of steel cable to do that. They work on 1,000, 1,500 foot towers, so they can, but so that was a stable place for that heavy truck to be, right?
Right. And they used, you know, they had, basically I'm going to call it a backloader. I'm not quite sure what it was, but they used that to take the tower sections out, and they did just what you would typically do with a tower. They put up a gin pole, which is basically a small tower section that they attach to the tower, and they put up pulleys and they haul up the tower sections.
Okay.
And they bolt them in place, and everything was good and everything was happy, and we got everything together, and the building inspector came out and went, whoa. we also had to pull an electrical permit because we had to rewire the tower set. When the tower section came down, one of the guy wires actually shorted the cable for the tower lighting going out to the tower, because it just lays in the swamp. So, you know, we had to have that replaced.
Okay.
And we got everything together and everything was great and everything was just ducky. And okay, so now we're going to fire up the directional. But before we fired up the directional, I was out there with the electricians and we were going to hook it up. At the bottom of these towers, there's a thing called an Austin ring transformer. And for those who don't know what one is, you have to isolate the radio signal from the AC power line. And there's a couple of ways to do that. In this case, mm-hmm. there's fairly high voltage at the bottom of these towers. So these are two interlocking rings that go together something like this. They don't touch, but they form a transformer and they allow the AC to pass, but it doesn't allow the RF to come back into the AC power line. So I went out with the electricians and we're going to wire this thing in. And as we touched the toroidal transformer, or the Austin ring transformer, it proceeded to fall apart.
The transformer fell apart.
Yeah, the mount, and then of course the transformer starts falling apart, and it's like, okay, now what? And then I thought for a minute. I had taken a station off the air over in Queens back in February. And those four towers were there. They had sold the land. The four towers were still there. So I called the new owners of the land and said, hey, look, there's a transformer at the bottom of one of these towers that I want. What would you like for it? Here's what it was worth if I bought it new. What would you like for it? And they said, we're just going to take the towers down and junk them anyway. Come get it.
Oh.
So I went and got a $6,000 Austin Ring transformer for nothing.
Wow. Okay. That's resourceful and lucky. You must be living right.
Oh, yeah. So we get that in and everything's good. And I fire the thing up and the daytime came up. Yeah, just about where it was the last time I had seen it in operation, which had been in November. We're talking May right now.
Okay.
So it needed a tweak, and that wasn't bad. And I brought it up on night pattern, and all hell broke loose because night was out in left field. All the phases on each of the towers were supposed to be positive. One was actually negative. I'm like, well, what the heck's going on here?
Huh.
So that's when I figured, because I didn't know the time of day that this failed. That's when I determined that it failed on night pattern.
Okay.
So I started looking. I said, let's look in the phaser first. And sure enough, there were two capacitors in what's called the phase delay leg for tower number two, which is the reference tower, that were split. Yeah. They were split.
Because it failed at night while it was in the night pattern, you figure there may have been some damage done during the failure, some electrical damage done in addition to correct. The physical damage done. You're thinking, okay, right. What was in the circuit at the time that this failed that could have been chewed up by too much power or something.
Right. And having been out at the tower, you know, while they were building it, I knew there was nothing in the tuning box.
Yeah.
So I looked in the phaser and I found these two mica capacitors, replaced the capacitors. Everything was great. It was still out, but now the phases were in the right direction. And then I remembered back in October when I was finishing up tuning this thing up, I had to do some cranks on the phaser. So those caps may have been on their way out at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So I get everything back in. Everything's back in except tower three's out a little bit. And I had to make an adjustment because I did make an adjustment at tower three in October. So I go walking out to tower three to make the adjustment in the tuning box. And I take a look and beside the catwalk, there's a guy anchor for tower three. And I'm looking at what the heck's that? It's a guy wire. Okay. One, two, none, four, five.
Oh,
so a guy wire snapped. Actually, not the guy wire itself didn't snap. They call it the saddle. It's a ring, and there's a bolt that goes through it, and it holds the guy wire onto the tower.
Okay.
That had snapped. One of those.
Do you know if it snapped during the storm or well after?
No. This was well after. Now these towers had been inspected at least three times before. You know, but before the tower crew was finished building the tower.
Yeah.
So they didn't see anything wrong. So, you know, Philly Strand actually came and got that guy wire because they were flabbergasted. It was like, what do you mean it snapped? Well, it snapped. You take a look. I mean, it was a clean break. But now we had two problems. First problem is where that guy wire was missing was at that pivot point. It was on the level that the insulator sits on.
The different tower, though.
Yeah, on a different tower.
On a different tower. Okay.
So it was like, okay. So once again, get the tower crew out, and they looked at it, and they went, you know, we're not going to climb that. I said, well, no kidding. I figured that much. What can we do? And they said, well, we're going to take the tower down. I went, no, we're not. We're not taking the tower down. At that point, I called our attorney again and said, you ought to just talk to the town just in case. We had a guy wire snap. We may have to do a controlled collapse of a tower. We don't know yet. And once again, I called Tony. And Tony came out and he went, you know what? He says, let's relax the tension on those other two guy wires on that section.
And right, because the two remaining ones are pulling the tower toward their vector, their combined vector.
Right.
And the one side of the tower doesn't have a guy wire at this point because the kind of V-shaped bolt or whatever it was up there, the contraption holding it, had snapped. Right. Okay.
And when they did that, you know, taking a look through it through a transom to take a look at, you know, how straight the tower actually straightened up.
By relieving the pressure And again, this was about the middle of the tower where the insulator was just above it, right?
Yep, exactly. It was okay. It was at the shelf that the insulator sits on.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Now how are we going to get out to the tower? Yeah, you know, what we need is a man lift.
Wait. Are you saying that nobody wants to climb the tower to fix it at this point?
Yeah, nobody wants to climb the tower because it's unstable, because that guy wire is missing and there's a pivot point.
Things could go horribly wrong right there, couldn't they?
Yep, exactly. And that tower could come down with somebody on it.
Okay.
So all right. We had to get a man lift, which is basically a large bucket truck. We needed one about 180 feet tall because that points at 150.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Look, I've not been to Sunbelt Rentals lately, but are there man lifts that are 180 feet tall?
Yes, there are.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. But here we go again. It's like, so how are we going to get out there? Well, the shortest distance to get out there was through a town park.
Oh.
So I picked up the phone and called the lawyer back. And this time we got on a conference call with the mayor and said, okay, we're not taking the tower down, but we're going to need to go through the town park to get the heavy equipment in. And he said, just do what you got to do.
Suncast, why don't we take another look at that 00 picture again, that map, that overhead view. All right. Now, which one is Tower 3?
Tower 3 is the one on the upper right.
Okay. So, all right. So it's closer to the road. It's next to Tower 2, which was the farthest one. Right.
Okay. And what's on the other side of the transmitter building, on either side, is a town park. And what we wanted to do was go straight in from the tower towards the road. So we had to take down a couple of sections of fence, and we had to go over the park. And the mayor was like, just do what you got to do. Just make sure the fence is back together. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got the pads again, and we went out there, and actually we ended up using a triple layer of pads. And we brought it right up to the tower fence. And then we learned something. Those man lifts, these aren't your father's man lifts. These have sensors in them. They sense everything from, is the thing slightly tipping? Is it tilting? Is it slipping? Is it, what's it doing?
Yeah, because an accident would be a big problem at this point.
Right. And we were operating on Tower 4, which is the closest one to the camera here, at 5,000 watts on Tower 4. And they start going up in the man lift, it'll only go up 120 feet.
It won't go any farther.
Right, it won't go any farther. So
the controls like says, nope, we're stopping here.
Yeah, it just stops and says, nope, not going farther. Have a nice day. So we got the company out, and the guy comes out, plugs a laptop into the thing, and he starts looking at the thing, and he's like, look at this. He's looking at all this noise on the sensors. We had to shut the transmitter off.
Oh, of course. Okay. I didn't see that coming.
Now they went up, they brought this wire up, brand new Philly strand guy wire, brought it up 150 feet, attached it, brought it out, attached it to the guy anchor, and life is good. Everything's great.
Yeah.
Now we're ready. Okay. Everything's cool. So company buying comes out, we go through the due diligence and everything looks good. So they schedule a date. And that was supposed to be last week. And then I'm out in Iowa last week, and I get a phone call that we're getting audio alarms from the transmitter site. Okay, so I log in and take a look, and transmitters and VSWR alarm.
Okay, which tower came down this time?
Well, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. But, nobody's yelling. So I figured, okay, I flipped it over to Night Pattern, and everything was fine. And I said, okay. So something's wrong. Don't know what. So on the way back from the airport Friday, I stopped in, looked in. The first thing I did was I looked in the phaser, didn't see anything out of the ordinary. So I walked out to it and I brought the power down on the transmitter as high as I could get it to run. Now this is supposed to be 25,000 watts. It would run at 1500 and stay on. Mm-hmm. So start punching things up on the antenna monitor. And it's like, well, look at that. Tower 3 basically doesn't exist. I wonder why. So out to Tower 3 we go, and I open the tuning box, and one of the contactors was basically vaporized.
Oh.
They took a lightning strike.
Okay. So, and this wasn't related to the hurricane winds, the guy wire snapping. It's just
somebody doesn't
how old is this site? 50-something years old? 60?
It's older. 1960 was when the towers were put up. So,
well, you know, if you got a 60-year-old car, there's stuff going wrong every week, right?
Right. And it's like, so, you know, I mean, the solenoids and stuff on the contactor and the base plate were still good. So I ordered everything else.
Okay.
and today I went down and I rebuilt the contactor, which is why I made the show by the skin of my teeth, because up in this part of the world, everybody goes to the Catskills on the weekend and everybody's in your way on the road.
And just to make it clear for those who don't know what this is an RF contactor, like the seesaw thing with the little, with the pins and the yep. The silver plated contacts.
Contact. Yep. That's it.
Okay. Okay. So this is like a great big switch that switches RF energy in or out of a circuit. And it's got to make great contact because it may be passing a lot of power right there in those contacts.
And in this case, the pretty much almost all of the daytime side was gone. I mean, just gone. It wasn't there.
Wow. Wow. And these contactors, as beefy as they are, they're not so good at carrying lightning.
No. Lightning has this habit of doing things.
Yeah,
usually not
vaporizing things. Okay, all right.
So, but now I'm happy, and I called the owner. I said, "Go sign the paperwork."
It's on the air. Go sign the paperwork. Okay. Wow. This particular station has been an African American. It's been a black oriented station its whole career, its whole life.
Yeah. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, for part of the 90s, it was an R&B station. The only, okay. Pretty much the only one in the 60s and 70s, pretty much the only one in New York City. And then, you know, as FM started coming up, well, then they had an FM R&B station. The company that owned it then took it. I believe it was Hispanic okay. Talk and Hispanic mm-hmm. music. But when they increased the power at the site, the station used to be 5,000 day, 5,000 night.
Oh,
they ended up buying a couple of other stations at 1600, which is where they're located on the dial.
Okay.
And taking them off the air so they could go 25,000 watts daytime.
Gotcha.
Well, that kind of put them in a financial strain. And next thing you know, they're selling the station. And the person who owns it presently is a doctor. She's a pediatrician. She's Indian. She took it with an Indian format. And when COVID hit, here's something a lot of people don't think about. Mm-hmm. When COVID hit, she decided to sell it. And the reason she decided to sell it, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, she couldn't sell a commercial to save her life.
Okay.
Nobody was buying. But even worse than that, she's a pediatrician. She had pretty much laid off half of her staff. And you sit there and go, well, wait a minute, what? Well, she's a pediatrician. School was not in session, so there were no school physicals. There were no summer sports. Nobody was getting hurt.
Oh, okay. Okay.
She all of a sudden had no business.
So gotcha.
She had no choice. Yeah. She had to get rid of the station. But it's kind of back to its roots right now. It's carrying the Black Information Network for my heart.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So, yep. Gotcha. Well, good deal. Well, Tom, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll just have a couple minutes, and I want to hear, some incredible feat of daring do that you did in Iowa or somewhere, or if you got a wrap up for this story. Either way is fine. Okay. I'm Kirk Harnack. Tom Ray of Tom Ray Consulting at TomRayConsulting.com is my guest. Photos that we've been showing are provided by Scott Feibusch. Thank you, Scott, for permission to carry those. And like I said, I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to hear real quick from our friends at Vox Pro, and we'll be right back.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's Vox Pro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why Vox Pro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in Vox Pro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller 9 to him saying, I'm ready.
5, ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff, hit delete, it goes away. Here's your edit.
You are tackling secret sound, caller 9.
I'm ready, St. John.
One of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about VoxPro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, yeah, this was fun, jury duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. VoxPro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about VoxPro, and you'll be glad you did.
VoxPro is available from Broadcasters General Store. You can call them at 352-622-7700. Broadcasters General Store. And you can get VoxPro. You can get all kinds of things from BGS. Good people. Love them. Know them well. Had dinner with them numerous times. Check them out at 352-622-7700 or bgs.cc is the website. Wow. St. John did his show from the Jury Duty Hotel. Tom, have you ever done engineering from jury duty?
No, but last time I was on jury duty, I said to the judge, I said, you know, I'm on call. I said, Do you want me? She says, I'd like you. And it was actually a very interesting case because by listening to the case, it was a DWI case. I can tell you how to get out of a DWI thing now.
Do you want that to be your tip of the week, or do you have something else for us to see us out as we finish out?
Actually, I got two quick stories for you. One, Well, you mentioned Iowa. Some people know, a lot of people don't. I deal with a nationally syndicated car repair radio show on the weekend, Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. And I went out to Iowa, and this was one of my bigger clients. They have a station, and the AM was having a problem. So, excuse me, I went and went to find out what was going on with it. And I went out there, and the guy who cuts the grass and maintains the building was out there. Great guy. And we're sitting there. I'm wearing my New York Giants hat. And he's like, we start talking football. And he's looking at me. And he whispers to the woman who's the general manager, who whispers back to him. And his eyes get big. And he's, you're the guy who works with the car doctor. I've never met a celebrity before. And I'm like, oh, my God. But he was a great guy. Had to take a picture of him. Had to go have dinner with his wife and his daughter and him because they'd never met a celebrity before.
There you go. That's awesome.
First time I've been recognized by my voice. But the other tower tale I was going to tell, and I unfortunately don't have pictures on this, is up in Ogdensburg, New York. I have a station that's got a four-legged self-supporting tower, 400 feet tall. Things got to be at least 15, if not 20 feet across, leg to leg.
Okay, no guy wires. It's 400 feet tall. It's wider at the bottom. It's four legs.
It's an
AM tower with insulators, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's got insulators.
Okay.
One of these legs.
I used to engineer for one of these. Unfortunately, it fell down during a tornado, but yours didn't fall down yet.
No. But it came close. I went out there one day, you know, springtime came up in Ogdensburg. You're talking, it's 30 below zero in the winter. You get snow. You get all kinds of snow. I mean, Canada is literally right there. I mean, the bridge to Canada is right there. And I went out and took a look, and there wasn't a crack in the insulator. There was a chunk out of the insulator.
Oh.
A chunk of ceramic.
Okay. This happens.
We got to do something about this. So. You know, we get a tower company up there, and they're going to change the insulator. Well, how do you do this? You don't take the tower down.
Right. You know, so a quarter of the tower's weight would typically sit with this insulator, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not sure how much this tower weighed, but it had to be umpteen tons.
400 feet of steel. Yeah. Weigh something. Yeah.
So they, what they do is they bring in a welder who welds steel bars, steel braces on the tower just above that insulator.
Okay.
And then they bring in these rather large hydraulic jacks.
Oh, so he welded some like wings so there's a place to put the jacks under.
Correct.
Okay.
And then they loosen up the bolts on the insulator. and they start jacking it up very carefully.
Okay.
And when they get it,
everybody's ready to run if they hear any creaking.
Exactly. And then when they get it about that much above the insulator so they can get it out, they pull out the insulator, put the new one in, bring the tower down. And then bolt everything in place and get the bolts lined up, and then they unweld the wings they put on it and the whole bit. The interesting thing is that that broken insulator had brought that leg of the tower down 2 inches.
Ah, so it was sagging 2 inches there with the broken insulator. Yep. Okay. Yep. So they had to jack it up about 3 inches.
Right, to get it out.
To get it out. Okay. By the way, where do you get, this is a specialized insulator. They don't have these at Harbor Freight Tools. Where do you get that kind of insulator?
Well, I talked to the tower company. I think it actually came from Austin originally, but it was funny. This is a tower guy. God, I've been dealing with this guy since he started the company in the early 1980s. He had one sitting in his garage at home. He took it as a souvenir from some tower they took down. It was an exact fit. He looked at the picture. He looked in the garage and he went, "You're not going to believe this.
you're not going to believe this. I have one. It's only $25,000."
And then there was a friend of mine because actually there was another insulator that over this past winter cracked. Just a crack. But they, we replaced that, but I was talking to this friend. They were taking down the tower. It was the exact same insulator. So the tower company now has 3 more of them.
Well, good. Good for them. Wow. Life is good. Tom, that is an amazing story. I'm glad you're there to take care of these problems. I don't know who else could coordinate some of these things that you've come across.
Oh, it was like, pick up the phone. Call this guy. Call that guy. Call that guy.
Wow. Wow. Tom, we got to go. I appreciate your time so much. It's always good to talk to you and good to hear your stories. And I hope you'll come back sometime when you've run into some more crazies. Oh, and Tom, I'm going to send you a text or something. Cause I got a question for the car doctor and maybe you're my in.
Okay. Definitely. Hey, you want to go on the show? I'll call you on Saturday and get you on the show.
That might be amazing. The problem that the car problem I'm having is not a crazy unusual problem, but the computer's telling me the wrong thing is wrong.
Got it.
So I want to know what the right thing is that's wrong.
Okay. Yeah. He'll point you in the right direction. Definitely.
And there's also the issue that I can clear the code, and the people at the emissions place in Nashville, they still have remnants of the code, and they say, "No, you're not going to pass with this." But it's only for the first 20 seconds the car's in operation. Nope, sorry, doesn't pass.
Yep.
Well, my emissions are fine. Nope, doesn't
pass. Yep. They see the history in there, and if that's something that's going to trigger it, well, that's okay. I just had to get rid of my daughter's car because it was overdue for inspection. When COVID came, New York wasn't inspecting, and then she was confined 50 miles from school. And they wouldn't let me come up and get the car because they would quarantine her. And as a veterinary student, fourth year, you can't do that. She can't be quarantined. She's got to be touchy feely. So I went up and got the thing, and they put the thing up on the jack, and there was a hole in the frame under the cradle that holds the engine that I could put my fist through. And I went, "Yeah, time for a car."
Time for a car. Yeah. And she's a vet now.
She is. She's a veterinarian. She's working at the VCA of the South Shore up in South Weymouth, Mass. So if you go in, ask for Dr. Sarah Ray, and she'll be happy to take care of you.
Glad to hear. We got to go.
She's a small exotics expert, and she's looking to become a specialist in cardiology.
Wow! And small exotics cardiology?
No. Canine cardiology, but she's a small exotics expert as far as guinea pigs and hamsters and rabbits and snakes and birds. And
all right, good deal. Hey, I got it. We do have to go. So thanks to Suncast for punching the buttons and making the show go very well. Appreciate that very much, and doing this on a odd day on a Friday. So Tom Ray, thank you for being with us. We're going to have you back when you have more stories to tell. Hey, be sure you check out our sponsors, if you would, for this week in Radio Tech. We Broadcast General Store, angryaudio.com, also the folks at maxconnectwireless.com and bionic.radio. All these are great spots. Oh, and Nautel too, at nautel.com/webinars. Check them all out if you would, and let them know that you heard about them here on This Week in Radio Tech. I would appreciate it very, very much. And so would they. They need to know where their advertising dollars are working for them. We're going to see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.